Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Great to have you in on this President's Day, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, 80s action star. Colton Stone looking gangster, man. You got the flat bill, the San Jose Sharks, at rolling. It's good. We're loaded up, man. We'll get into some spring football thoughts, because March 4th is not that far away. Jay Moore going to be with us in 15 minutes. Charlie McBride, Mondays with Charlie. Can't wait to talk to Coach. And then how about some Husker hoops? Jacob Padilla will drop by, and we'll spend some time with him. Good weekend. Nebraska basketball able to beat Northwestern. Truth be told, the last 20 minutes of pre-Hail Varsity, I have been glued. And Robin Washit tweeted this out, so I want to give him credit for that. And it's Jeff Goodman, right? Jeff Goodman, college basketball writer. He's with watchstadium.com. Phenomenal basketball writer. I think he was with ESPN forever. Mm-hmm. That sound right?
I think so.
There's so many departures from ESPN. But anywho, Goodman, I think he's been on with us. I think we had him on last year. But the Good and Plenty podcast, and he sits down with Tim Miles. And if you're a Nebraska basketball fan, if you are pro Miles, great, listen to it. If you're part of the angry mob that is tired of Tim Miles, go listen to it. And I want to spend just a few minutes on that, talk a little Northwestern, get into Penn State, and then also get into some Nebraska baseball, because they went nuts, and that was really cool to see. Against Riverside, a 3-1 opening weekend, just gash session by the Nebraska baseball team that's young and old and somewhere in between. And they did work. Good for them. That's a confidence builder. Oregon State's going to be a bit of a different challenge starting Thursday. But, hey, Nebraska baseball's off to 3-1. See, what you're looking at right now, Colton Stone, and you just heard a squeak behind you. I've been in there editing, okay? There is a computer that may be 2003-ish old. You can turn your mic on. The white one that looks like it's been sandblasted, kind of looks like the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah.
Okay? Yeah, that computer in there is squeaking. It's like Lemmy Winks is stuck in there. Okay? He's trying to get out. So there is a squeaking computer that may be close to 17 years old that probably runs this whole satellite setup. I mean, it's like an hourly motel bed that squeaks. That's what's going on right now.
Yeah.
So... It hurt us. So I had to just, what the hell's going on? Old computer. Put another quarter in. It'll be okay. Back to this Good and Plenty podcast. What you have is a sit-down with Jeff Goodman and Tim Miles. It's very honest and factual about what life is like on the hot seat. You like Tim, you're ready to move on from Tim, go listen to it, okay? It's really good. Just some highlights here of Bill Moose, Tim Miles. And Miles on this podcast touched on about how Bill Moose sat down with Tim and his staff. That's not new news. You knew that they had met and Moose had met with the team to offer support. And that was brought up. So Perlman's able to say, bro, what's life on the hot seat like? How are you dealing with this year? Tell me about your family, social media. I mean, all of the things that have been awful, and specifically the month of January, mm-hmm. where the month of January was just a killer for Nebraska. Okay. So Miles gets into a lot of things, but I was, my ears perked up with, okay, the guy is on a podcast 2 days before Penn State after a win against Northwestern. And he is talking like he'd talk to guys that are doing games for the BTN or talking to guys he's close with that cover the Nebraska beat, okay? Mm-hmm. You can have off-the-record conversations, just how things are. And Tim Miles is very candid. He's very open. He's very honest. He's great to listen to, okay? But he's doing this podcast with Perlman, and I think it just, like, about 3 hours ago is when it came out. So Miles is like, yeah, Bill Moose sat down with us, me and the staff. And first and foremost, Moose just laid out there, and this is not butt kiss time by Miles to Moose. This is just Miles being pretty straightforward. Yeah, Moose is fine. Moose is good. I mean, you're going to say that about your boss, but what the hell's he have to lose now, right? But he was like, yeah, Moose is like, look, retention's certainly possible. Mm-hmm. I don't think you want to fire a guy just because you want to fire a guy. You have to look at the long-term health of a program. What's its outlook? Where's it at? How's it trending? Is it stale? Are you going to be able to do better? Are you at your ceiling? Are you going to be better as a coach? Are you going to get talent in? I mean, all those things you got to think about, okay? So Moose lays out to Miles, per Miles on this podcast, that retention is possible. There's been no edict. There is no edict. And Moose just is like, look, I'm going to get out of your way. Go get him. I'm rooting for you. I want you to do well. So the way I read into this is good luck. God bless. Go get it done. I don't want to have to do this. Mm-hmm. Which I thought was extremely fascinating from Tim Miles to Jeff. I said Perlman. It's Goodman. I said Goodman. So that was pretty good, okay? I liked that part of it. I really enjoyed Miles talking about his family. He's got a daughter that's a freshman at Nebraska. He's got a kid that's in eighth grade. His boy likes it here. He wants to be a high school student in Lincoln. And that's tough. And you've got this job speculation. Is he in? Is he out? And it's hard on families, mm-hmm. because you've got things on social media. You hear and see what people say, even if you try and avoid it. And you can't really do anything and chirp back. Okay? So, I mean, imagine yourself in that situation, and you can come back at me and say, well, it's the price of doing business. It's money. The guy makes enough. It's just part of the deal. Fine, mm-hmm. It is, but it's never easy on anybody, is the point. And I thought Tim was pretty straightforward about that, about his family. He says, we'll be fine regardless, which I thought was good. And Tim also kind of touched on a mistake he made. He didn't say Jordy by name, but just some mistakes he's made as a coach. And lamenting how things ended last year and the fact that they didn't get in from this league. It's really insane to think about that, okay, resume-wise, you can make the argument that they didn't do enough to get in. Mm-hmm. From a league standing standpoint, history speaks to no one's never gotten in if you've won 11 league games, let alone going 13-5. So with the pressure mounting, and the expectations, the weight of expectations, being very real. And on this podcast with Jeff Goodman, Tim Miles touched on how those expectations really, really, really bogged down his team this year. Living up to it. Chasing that ghost. And it just kind of comes down to the player's mentality. They have talent. They're good. But when it comes to that target, and Bill Moose has talked about it a lot, and you hear about it in sports and athletics, it's one thing to win as kind of a surprise. It's another thing to go win when you're favored. Mm-hmm. That pressure of being the favorite where you're your own standard. right? And I don't know that Nebraska's ever gotten to that point yet. And it's not a Tim Miles thing. It's a Nebraska basketball thing where you got to go back to the knee era where they kind of had their own standard of getting to 20 wins. There's enough talent to get to 20 wins. Your own standard was you're bulletproof at home and you find ways to win big games at home. That's been a staple of Nebraska basketball when Nebraska basketball has been really good and relevant nationally getting to the NCAA tournament. And I forget this because, I mean, it's been a long, long time ago, but it doesn't feel that long ago to me where, I mean, I still remember vividly Nebraska's tournament teams. That was my wheelhouse growing up as a sports fan. But the fact is, it's been two decades since Ty Lue took the gang to the NCAA tournament before Pettaway and company went. There has been some awful, awful seasons mm-hmm. with no hope of postseason, post-Danny Knee on a regular basis. Not saying those coaches weren't good people. Not saying that Barry and Doc weren't good folks. But you just had no hope. Mm-hmm. You were not good. And you weren't going to be good. So Miles comes in here, gets some talent in here. And again, that bar is up there. Your own kind of bar of expectations. More from Miles on this podcast with coaching pressure. And he touched on just how the narrative is. He tries not to read or look at Twitter or social media, but it's out there. But there's the narrative here with all these players leaving. Okay. You had Morrow leave. You had Jacobson leave. You had the kid leave for Rutgers a couple of years ago, the guard. You know who I'm talking about.
Yeah,
good ball player.
Yeah.
You have Jordy quit. And Miles, I mean, we bring that up twice a week. Not to pile on the guy, but when you're bitching about depth issues, there's your problem. Your four-year guys all have vanished. But Miles did something he'd never done before, and he said it hurt the team last year. Again, he didn't say Jordy's name, didn't say Jordy by name, but he let a kid back on. He let Jordy back. Remember when Jordy quit last year?
Probably like 12 games in?
Yeah, we were wondering what's going on with that. Then you let him back. I didn't think you could let him back on because he was going to be a malcontent. Jordy was really nice for you down low. I mean, he wasn't a guy that had to go get you 15 and 10, but once in a while, he'd be your fastball, so to speak, to be able to bang down low. Mm-hmm. But Miles was so worried about more criticism with another kid leaving the program that he let him back on. That was a nugget here in this podcast. That, I mean, that's real. And for him to admit that, man, kudos to him for being honest, but it kind of goes deeper here with roster management, stacking your program, having depth, and then if you're going to be, you know, the recycle bin here with top 150 talent and transfer students in, there's nothing wrong with going after transfer students. But I don't think what's happened with Tim Miles in Nebraska basketball is like a bedrock of culture. You've not had four-year guys set the tone and pay it forward to other four-year guys. Because it's been two-year guys or the transfer three-year guy that comes in, wants to play in this offense, is going to be the mercenary to come get 20 points a ball game and be the team leader. It's a landing spot in the Power Five that you'll have plenty of eyeballs on you to get to that next level. That's the sales pitch. You got to live with the sales pitch. And from a team chemistry standpoint, when it comes to shot taking and decision making, sharing the basketball, building depth, it's just not worked out. That's been the misstep. But again, here, Jeff Goodman's podcast, The Good and Plenty. Great stuff with Tim Miles. Sounds like there's two really good recruiting classes lined up for Nebraska. You know some of the talent coming in here with the upcoming group, mm-hmm. The kid out of Western Nebraska Community College. You have Burke, the guard, in waiting. And the other part, that retention is absolutely an option. That's Bill Moose to Tim Miles. So that's pretty good. And Miles just touched on just how venomous social media is. He's a big social media fan. but everyone can blast you. It's one thing to have the local media kind of get in on you. That comes with the territory. But everybody's got a take to get in line, and they got their sharp objects out. So this is pretty fascinating. Very fascinating. And being able to coach with this pressure. Miles seems to be okay. He's worried about his family. Very candid about that. And we'll see where Nebraska goes. Penn State is... this is a game that... whether... let me say this. On the wrong night, Gonzaga or Duke or Kentucky could go to Penn State and find a way to lose.
Well, Michigan did, so.
Okay. I'm saying that Penn State has some dudes mm-hmm. that can play ball.
Yeah.
But on the wrong night, it's the last place on earth you want to go play. And it's very interesting with Illinois and Penn State and what type of damage do they invoke on this league. Indiana's fading. What's Minnesota doing right now? They're teetering. Nebraska needs to put a run together. Like, Northwestern's a complete joke this year. And Nebraska found a way to keep them in it because they shots aren't going to fall. And Nebraska will need some shots to fall. Jay Moore, we'll talk some spring football with him next on Hail Varsity.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
We're going to talk some pigskin. We welcome in Blackshirt Husker NFLer. It's Jay Moore at JayMoore44 on Twitter. Jay Bird, are you making a snowman?
I am not. I tell you what, whatever snowmans are out there, I hope they disappear soon. The snow is getting brutal for me. It's been a struggle. I know we're still in the middle of February in Nebraska, but I swear to God, it feels like we've had snow on the ground since about Labor Day. So it's getting old here real quick.
You're pacing around and you are ruining all the snowmen in South Lincoln, aren't you?
Yes. Yep, they are grabbing a baseball bat as we speak, and they'll be pulverized.
You're coming around the edge, and they're the quarterback, is what it amounts to. Lots on social media with what Nebraska's been up to with strength and conditioning, Coach Duvall, and you see all those plates in the weight room, and you see guys going to work at it. What are your thoughts here, Jay? And I know you're close down with folks at the university, and what's the vibe you're getting? You feeling pretty good about how much bigger, stronger, faster kids are getting?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was just going to be a matter of time. I mean, you know, from the tweet I saw from Zach Duvall earlier, I mean, they're showing guys with, you know, over 800 pounds on a squat rack. I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean, that's a ton of weight, those guys, I mean, they're obviously, you know, attacking it and handling it. And, you know, that's just part of the process that he puts them through. Whether it's the circuit, the metabolic circuit, you name it, this is the time of year you throw on the weights and you make those barbells bend. You get strong, and you get faster. You don't have to be in great conditioning. You're not playing any football games here yet. So you get really strong and you get really fast in the winter. That's what we're doing. They're putting the work, they're putting the effort. They had a little bit of, they got a little, head start on winter conditioning, obviously, not playing the bowl game. Hopefully that's the last time that happens in a very long time. It's just the process. You know, Zach's going to get these guys physically ready. I mean, the more weight you can put on, I mean, move better and lift heavy. You know, that's always been, the creed of being a really good athlete. You got to be able to move well, and you got to be able to lift, you know, move a lot of weight, especially as a football player. And that's what they're doing right now, and you know it'll pay off. Starting here in September.
What'd it do for you as a player when it came to strength and conditioning? You're a guy who, I mean, you sold out. You worked hard. That was what you were, and a really good player, but a guy that put the off season work into. What did it do for you mentally?
Well, I mean, a lot of it is just. It just gives you confidence, you know, because it's a grind sometimes. You're going through some of those workouts where, you know, you're squatting, you got to do 5 sets of 10, and you got, 405 on that, 385, 405 pounds. And that's a lot of weight to move for 10 reps for five sets. I mean, you're putting in that work. But the thing is, you know, when you see the gains, because when you're so young, you know, you're 18, 19, 20, 21 years old, you see improvement so quick because your body, they can handle everything. You know, 1 week, you start off, okay, you know, I just did bench press. I did 315 for three. Then 2 weeks later, you're doing 315 for eight. And you're like, holy smokes. Mm. And that just becomes addictive. You know, you see the gains, you see the results. You're like, man, let's, you know, you want those jumps, you want those results. But also, you know, it gives you the confidence, but then you see how it translates to the football field, especially for a D lineman like myself. You know, you're able to squat heavy, but you're able to, you know, bench press and shoulder press and do all this upper body stuff that you become really stout at the point of attack. You're going on one-on-one to tackle a guard, a tight end, whatever it is. You just feel strong, and you can separate and use your hand and get rid of them and make plays. And that's really where that bench press and all that work kind of comes in. You can just control everyone at that point of attack on the line of scrimmage. And that's huge. So it did a lot. You know, I was one guy. You know, I had to work at it. You know, I'm just not a physically gifted. You know, I just didn't ever show up in the weight room and can just throw up insane amounts of weights like a lot of guys could do, like Adam Carricker or Cody Glenn came in there. I feel like Cody Glenn came out squatting like 405 out of the womb. So, you know, some guys are just so freakishly talented on the weight, but I always had to work at it. I always felt like if I didn't touch a weight for a week, all my gains I'd made, or I kind of threw them out the trash. So I was one kind of, not necessarily a gym rat, but I just knew I had to always kind of keep at it. I felt like I really couldn't take too many weeks off during the off season, especially during whether you know after a bowl game or over spring break, because I didn't want to lose those gains that you worked so hard to, and I felt like I would lose them if I did take too much time off. So, but it just gives you tons of confidence, and I tell you what, when you start seeing the jumps. Your production level on the field, but also, you know, in the weight that you're moving, man, it's a lot of fun when you start doing all those things.
You nailed it. Point of attack is going to be so important for Nebraska moving forward. It got better, but it wasn't great, and that was kind of highlighted with the Iowa game where, you know, Nebraska just couldn't stop Iowa for vast amounts of that game, and you look at what Nebraska was able to do to get close, but, you know, be better at the point of attack. Some young kids I'm going to name off for you, and who are you excited for most this spring? Casey Rogers, Tate Wildeman, a couple of defensive linemen, Ty Robinson, another choice. Got some guys in the secondary with C.J. Smith and Cameron Jones. Also, you have Cam Juergens, the product out of Beatrice. Who are you looking at this spring to obviously not have to start, but guys that need to play key minutes here this fall?
Yeah, I mean, all those guys that you named it. I'd even throw like a guy like Caleb Tanner in the mix there too, because we have to get a pass rush, some speed off the edge. And I think, I mean, I'm not the first one here to say him, but he's kind of been coined that guy that says, hey, you know, you need to be that dude. You need to be that man that can bring that speed and power off the edge and bring that fear back into the pass rush of the D line that, you know, we had for a little bit at times this year, especially in that Colorado game, but sometimes it was non-existent. So I look at a player like him, I look at Cam Juergens. I mean, if he can fill in, you know, comes in, and obviously he's a hell of an athlete. We've seen what he's able to do on the football field in high school and, you know, with the track and throwing the disc and the shot and his ability to move, and you get him up and put that weight on him. You put him in a center position, you're able to get him pulling and moving so well in the offensive line. That could bring an offense that was already pretty damn good this last year. He maybe can, the football starts a game of inches, as we all know. But you're able to get, you know, that one extra step a little quicker. You know, you get off the ball, get that snap. You know, just those things just a little bit quicker and make, you know, get that line moving just a little faster, come off the ball and just sealing some edges, sealing some alleys and stuff like that with Cam and his ability to move. That's going to be really important for this offensive line. And just like the D-line, the offensive line still has got to make plenty of gains at that position. So he's one that I'm very intrigued by. You know, you look at really, I think all the guys on the D line. Like I said, I mean, I'll say it till I'm 90 years old, and hopefully I'm still around when I'm 90 years old. But this game's one up front, and you need dudes, you need freaks, you need men on offensive, defensive line, and we got to develop them. We need you know, we need, you know, 15 deep, you know, guys you can count on offensive line. You need, you know, you need 12 guys on the defensive line that, you know, you can throw in there and say, hey, you know, on that point of the line of scrimmage, you know, play on their side of the ball and make plays. And some of those guys, you know, Casey Rogers and Wilderman, those guys come in, even Ty Robinson as a freshman, you know, their numbers are going to be called here sooner rather than later. They got to step up and answer the bell and start making some things happen and getting one another in the line of scrimmage. And it's going to be fun to see. It's fun to see the process, fun to see the development of both sides of the ball. And, you know, that's where the game's won. You saw it with the Iowa game. You know, defensively, Nebraska got owned physicality-wise. I mean, they pushed us around all games. So, you know, we got to get better on both sides of the ball, but it's going to be fun. A lot of good talent, and it'll happen here rather quickly.
Couple more minutes. Jay Moore's with us, Black Shirt Husker NFLer at JayMoore44. Jay, HailVarsity.com story about the S&P numbers with SB Nation. And, you know, does a top 10 recruiting class have to be what you have to become a college football playoff team? Do you believe that?
To some point. I mean, obviously it's going to help. You know, some people believe it's, you know, it's about the Jimmys and Joes, not the X's and O's. And to some point, I mean, yes. You know, I believe, you know, it was Saban had said it, and Dabo had said it as well. You know, when you get in big games, you call plays and that you know, help your best players out. You're calling, whether it's offensively or defensively, you want to showcase your best players. And when you get, you know, obviously like Clemson and Alabama, they're part of those top 10 recruiting classes every year, and you're out for the last decade, it seems like. So it definitely helps. I don't think I wouldn't, you know, put all my chips into one basket or eggs in one basket with that saying. I think, especially here in Nebraska, you know, I think obviously you want to be top 25, but you can also be really efficient. You can get those, you know, you get the, you know, more of the threes and some fours, but you get some of those threes that have the speed, that have the athleticism, but yet they might just be a little, I wouldn't say undersized, but they just haven't spent a whole lot of time in the weight room. You know, maybe the high school they went to, they haven't, you know, had a great program, off-season program. So, you know, they're a little light, but, you know, all of a sudden they get here and, you know, they gain 15, 20, 30 pounds and they can still move just as well and run just as fast. All of a sudden that three-star player is now playing like a five-star in their second year. So I think you have to, you know, you can be really efficient. Like I said, one thing you always got to recruit, you need a top 10 recruiting class for speed-wise, in my opinion, whether it's a 3-4 or a 5-star. You got to get speed and players that can move, whether it's O-line, D-line, obviously linebackers in your secondary, you want, and wide receivers, you want to be able to, you want that speed, but you got to get guys that are athletes. That can do it all. You know, get the three sport athletes, and if you keep continuing to do that, develop them, put them through off-season program, like they're obviously going to go through. I think we'll be just fine here.
Jaybird, 15 seconds. The Heisman odds are out by Bet Online, and you have Adrian Martinez 12-1 for the Heisman in 2019. Are you going to put a grand down on Adrian?
I don't know. That's.
You have Tua, you have Trevor Lawrence, and then Hurts.
You know, those are, I would hold off my money.
All right. This year.
I would hold off. I still think year three is the magic year.
All right.
For the Big Red, so we'll see.
Stay warm. Jay Moore, Blackshirt Husker, NFL. Thanks, Jay Bird.
Yep, you got it.
Love talking spring ball with Jay Moore. Good stuff. We'll get into some of those Heisman odds. Charlie McBride, Mondays with Charlie coming up. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
He's in his 30s, but sounds like he was born with a stogie in one hand and a brew in the other.
Now, say my name.
It's Schmitty on Hail Varsity Radio.
I got the body of a taut preteen Swedish boy.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. How about buckling up for safety? How about buckling up? We were all buckled up, man. We were driving back from Hampton, Nebraska on Saturday night with that mother load of ice and snow. And, well, I don't know how much ice there was, but it was just snow. and the visibility was brutal. We were all buckled up. So when it comes to preventing excessive injuries, seatbelts are the way to go. What do you want to stop you? A seatbelt or the windshield? And when your body needs to slow down and your vehicle needs to slow down, buckle up. That applies to the driver's seat, passenger seat, or back seat. Click it or ticket, a message from the Nebraska Department of Highway Safety. We're putting along. And junior head basketball, two Saturday during the day, two Saturday night in beautiful Hampton, population 450. And I'm not being like an a-hole here by saying beautiful Hampton. It's a nice town, mm-hmm. and they have an incredible new high school and grade school, right? I mean, it was just set up. Really nice gyms. So junior goes out and he balls out against not great competition. We'll just preface it that way. As you know, as the meters running, let's launch a three. I mean, you know, it's a little different than like the team he's on out there at Speedway. So, anywho, dude, we're driving along, and I'm in the wife mobile, and you're behind plow trucks, and you're behind semis, and a lot of semis had pulled off. You just get that ultra wintry mix when you follow a plow truck or a semi where you're just engulfed and you can't see. Luke Skywalker trying to crawl out of Planet Hoth. Blizzard. So that was a little stressful.
Yeah, I mean, it was nothing. Did you see the video from...
We were listening on the way home to the Nebraska game, and then it was pizza and beer time once we finally made it back here to watch the second half. And the whole bar, man, is there's legitimate shouts and screams of exuberance and excitement when Nebraska would. There's three or four little ladies that were just plowing Morgan and Coke all night, and there was so many minutes and possessions between scores that they would scream as loud as a game winner at the last second of a buzzer of a shot clock. And it was hard to watch. And every time I watch that team, if I'm at a bar and I'm with Junior and we're just watching with some friends, I'll want Nebraska to win. I know you're not like supposed to root, but I want them to win. I want them to do well. I want somebody good to talk about, okay? And they're up, and then there's room for Northwestern to get back. And I just, God, I can't stand their offense. Mm-hmm. I can't stand just how bad they are at shooting. I can't stand Roby needing to be screamed at halftime by his teammates to get aggressive. And I know he looked like the best player on the court because he was, with 19 points, 16 rebounds, 5 blocks, only 2 turnovers, which was huge.
Mm-hmm. No fouls,
couple of assists. So that was great. But the guy, am I wrong? Am I being greedy? But if he goes for 19 and 16, he needs to be at like 35 and 16 based on the shots he missed. Because that's where I'm at with him. Like when he hits a shot or he drives in and makes a spectacular play or gets a dunk, you expect that from the high-level athlete he's at. Mm-hmm. He is such a overthinker, it's insane. And I love the kid, and he's a good dude, and he busts his ass, so this isn't to just tear Roby down. But I get so freaking sick and tired of watching him jab, stab, shot fake, let's drive in, and then let's miss inside the paint. He's too good. He's too good for that. And he's upped his game, and he's been a little more consistent with double figures, right? Mm-hmm. But then he'll revert back to a 6-point game where he has 4 fouls. Mm-hmm. But he's been better, and good for him being better. But still, man, I mean, take the 3. You're good. You can hit jumpers. Drive in. Go up. Get fouled. Finish at the rim. And I guess I'm sadly a half-empty beer on Roby. Not have beers half full. The guy's already a junior, and is he ever going to figure it out? Mm-hmm. Is he ever going to get out of his own way and just go play free? He hit a couple of monster threes where he had to shoot. Guess what? You didn't have time to think about missing it and feeling bad. Someone get him on a couch, get his between his ears worked out, All right. Someone desensitize him. Okay. And just go ball, brother, because you're awesome. You're a good teammate. You're talented. There's no answer for Northwestern. Put him at the 3, the 4, and the 5. It's all good. And Roby could go off tomorrow night. Mm-hmm. He was a difference in game 1 against Penn State defensively. So he is fantastic. He's a high-level player that Nebraska doesn't get here every day. But you just want so much more for him.
I think the frustrating part watching it is the fact that you know, or you can at least make the assumption.
Just make a decision.
Well, yeah.
Right? Just be decisive.
He's the best player on the team, on the court, probably 90% of the time. And it's just frustrating.
And he's so timid, bro.
Yeah, and he doesn't play like he is. Exactly. And then you have James Palmer now. He's good in his own right, where he plays like he's the best player on the court. Sometimes it doesn't work.
He's good and terrible.
Right. There's not really an in-between for Palmer. He's either great or it's 6 points. But with Roby, it shouldn't be. There should be that middle ground where it's like maybe a little less points but more defense. But he doesn't really have that middle ground either where it's like, yeah, it's just 5 fouls. You're going to foul out.
You just don't see guys that are bigs or stretches that aren't primarily outside
right
assassins going 7 for 19. I mean, like, Roby affected the game big time, and what he did on the glass was money.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he got physical. He boxed out. He was great. He claimed almost every rebound. But, man, for him to just sit, I mean, the crowd's screaming, shoot it! Right?
Yeah.
And it just sucks that you're fighting for your life at 15-11 now, mm-hmm. 5 games under .500 now. You put 2 games together, and people got to go Joe Pesci on you at halftime. Get aggressive. Get after it. Take over, please. Glenn and JP are shooting 7 of 29. Somebody needs to score. We were going to talk Heisman odds here. We'll get that next. But I had to go off here where I'm just done being nice with Roby's performances. And I'm going to always, like, demand extra. I'm going to be that a-hole, I guess, that just says, great, 19-16 and 5 block, phenomenal game, great stat line. What was your production like? What was your efficiency like? He needs to be better efficiency-wise because it's there for him. Top of the key, your wing threes. The guy's good. He is. Take the shot. You start hitting that shot, guess what? Your pump fake and your want of posterizing somebody will happen, because once you start taking and making those, they're going to have to close out on you. Just finish at the rim. That's all I ask. We'll wind down hour one. Hail Varsity continues.
And we're back.
Fellas, you think we could listen to the radio?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
One final time this hour, it's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, 80s action star Colton Stone, at Two Birds, One Stone, at Schmidt_radio. Give us a follow on Twitter, can tweet at us, can email Chris at HailVarsity.com, 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865. That's the number to get in. I just jumped into this Tim Miles podcast, segment 1, and I didn't throw out any numbers, didn't say call. I'm a mess. Forgive me. It's not normally like me. Heisman odds. Oh, Jeff Goodman should be with us on Wednesday. Cool. The basketball writer for Stadium, long time with ESPN. Great sit down with Tim Miles. So your Heisman odds from Brett McMurphy and Bet Online is the 2019 Heisman. We have to check in with Danny Burke. He is right now at the Hard Rock with a colada drink right now at the swim up bar. And I think possibly 2 or 3 bouncers from the Hard Rock have probably asked him to quit staring at those in bikinis. I mean, can't you see Danny paddling up with, I don't know, the old Johnny Football Swan. Ladies, how are you? Danny Burke, Bride of Chicago. Can I get you a drink?
Trying to get someone to pay his tab.
I don't know if that's him. But I can see him. I'm Danny. You want to go back to my room? Oh, we're piling on the kid. Okay, your Heisman odds. Trevor Lawrence, 7-2. Tua, 5-1. Jalen Hurts, 13-2. Along with the following 12-1. ATN from Clemson, Fields. It's nice that Fields is this high already. Fromm from Georgia. Swift and Taylor. How about Adrian Martinez? 12-1 for the Heisman. We talked to Jay Moore a little bit about that earlier. And I'm excited, man. I'm excited for Adrian Martinez. He'll be in New York before his career's done at Nebraska. Mm-hmm. Is he in New York as a sophomore? Is he in New York as a junior? Is a question. And I would dare say, is he in there as a senior? But things go well. Maybe he's a first-round talent that leaves after his junior year.
I think the struggle is, and what happens a lot, is you have these like generational talents, but they don't play for a team that is undefeated or goes 11-1.
They don't play for a team that's ready yet.
Exactly. And you know, it's an individual award, but it really comes down to how good is your team.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, and you look at, I mean, Johnny Football burst on the scene, had the win against Alabama on the road. Mm-hmm. I mean, Scott Frost had Johnny Football and homeboy from Oregon, Mariota, both in the same class. That's how good he did at recruiting. You know, Johnny Football ended up going to A&M, obviously. But now, I think, and we talked with Jay about this strength and conditioning. If you become a badass on the offensive and defensive line as a program, then it's all going to work out. You're going to protect your quarterback. You're going to get after the other team's quarterback. You're going to stop the run. And you're going to have a difference maker at quarterback on 3rd and 8. Charlie McBride's next.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Into Hour 2 with Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, 80s action star Colton Stone. It is that time. It's a Mondays with Charlie, Mr. Blackshirt, Charlie McBride with his coach. How are we?
Well, I'm doing great. Just having fun. I'm just driving in traffic, having a good time.
You don't have any weather you're messing with, do you?
Yeah, we had rain, but I couldn't go out and do my walking today because the roads are all mud where we are.
Mm.
And I had to go down. They called me from the hospital way down in Phoenix, so I had to run down there and do something else, you know, another test for this and this and that, and then go down, take a couple more tests, and then they forgot to do this one, so come on back.
Man, well... Debbie
and I are just sitting here riding down the road having a good time.
Well, we can talk football now, huh? How's that?
That's right.
That's good. Coach, we love hearing from you, and I hope everything's okay. And I want to start off with the Nebraska defensive line position. And, of course, I was out last week. I'm not as tough as you. I was sick. I didn't get a chance to ask you, but I'm wondering, you know, what does Nebraska need on the defensive line? Dawson seemed to do really well, and the kids liked him. I haven't had a chance to ask you about it, but you were there. You were coaching the D-line. What is it going to take on that that spot for Frost and company when they look and try and make that next hire?
Well, I think the biggest thing is to get the pressure. You know, they've got to do something to, you know, to get more pressure going off the edges and things like that. I don't know whether they're going to make probably might make a few changes in alignments, maybe, you know, where they can keep the coverage the same as they've been doing. I don't think you want to try to mess too much with that unless you're going to go full load change up, but they're not. But you can do some things off the edge, and, you know, and you can put, you can actually substitute people, and you can get, you know, different people in there that can do those things. And that's why I mentioned a little bit, I think, last week about maybe, you know, you might take a guy, you know, that's a pretty good physical, strong safety, whatever, and have him, you know, be able to do some of those things at an outside linebacker type position and, you know, do some different, you know, different stunts and stuff off the edge. But I think that's the thing. Going ahead, it looked like, you know, in the past, it's been trying to not land so much here as the year before. It was just trying to get it. And the defensive guys weren't lined up unless you're just guy and try to get to the quarterback in X amount of seconds, and that's pretty hard to do. So you got to have some free reign, and I think with that comes a lot of big plays and puts a lot of fire in the rest of the defense, and, you know, even in the offense, make some big plays and stuff like that. I think that's probably the biggest thing is, you know, to try to create some more, you know, some more train wrecks.
Charlie McBride's with us Mondays with Charlie, Hale Varsity Radio. Coach, I look at what you did when you switched to the 4-3 and the amount of speed and athletes you had were incredible, and you'd always kind of move a guy up a level, right? That's how you went about it. Safeties could play corner, and the outside backer would move to a rush end, and those safeties would turn into being outside backers. And I'm thinking two kids in particular, Jamal Williams and of course Ed Stewart, were two guys that were just phenomenal for you. They were tough enough and fast enough to stop the run, but they could get after the quarterback. And then Terrell Farley was incredible as well. Did you blitz?
Right.
Did you blitz a lot because you loved it, or did you want to create that? Because I look at some teams that just rush 4 and drop 7, right? I mean, what was kind of your theory on the blitz?
We could do that. I mean, you can do that. I mean, we were just heavy on the pressure defenses.
Right.
I mean, that was our philosophy. Our philosophy was – mine was, if you look at what they call the 3-4, the old 5-2 type of thing. I think people can understand it a little easier. In a 4-3, you end up taking one lineman out on the 5-3, and so therefore you only have 4 linemen. And now they have 3 linemen with the 5-3, and that takes a little bit off of the speed part. Because what you're doing in a 4-3, you're taking a slower guy out and putting a faster guy in. So you're one up, you know, and I'm trying to get at. But that's kind of what I'm talking about. It, you know, we felt like we had more speed coming off the edge, and that would be better for us. And with the guys that were outside backers at the time that did that, you know, could really run. I mean, it's just like you take the outside linebackers right now, probably can, you know, are made to run, made to cover, made to do a lot of things. And where they came into the coverage aspect was in zone blitzes, where you would drop them when a linebacker rushed. Normally what they say in a zone blitz, if you hear terminology, what you're going to run into is a zone blitz is a 4-man rush with some stunts and things like that, you know, but there's still only 4 men. And what will happen by running a blitz is the fact that you're going to save one guy is going to run, and one guy looks like he might be blitzing and he may be dropping and stuff like that. So you try to trick them that way in their and they're picking up stunts and things. Now, if you hear of a fire blitz, that's, of course, F is five. So you have a five-man blitz, but that also is like a zone blitz because you'll have different people dropping. And some of our fire blitzes we had, in fact, if you go back and look, Steve Warren was our nose tackle, and he led our team in interceptions, which was kind of embarrassing. But you know,
not for Steve.
Thing about it was not, well, no, and it wasn't. But the funny thing about Steve is he had the best, probably had as good a hands as anybody on the football team, and you know he had a knack for knocking balls down when he was rushing passers and stuff like that. Some guys just have that kind of knack, you know, to do that, and. Steve was one of those guys. He looked like a giant fire hydrant, but he could move and he could catch the ball, and so had good ball skills.
Well, I tell you, that interior was so much fun to watch with Steve and Wiltz, and of course Jason and Christian, and you had a number of kids, and you had Vanden Bosch and Wistrom. I mean, you just had so much talent. Guys are working right now, Coach McBride, on strength and conditioning. I saw on social media that Zach Duvall, there's lots of plates on lots of bars, and guys are doing their squats. I mean, it is medieval, yeah. how much they're getting after it.
Yeah.
Did you really have to emphasize that to the kids, getting after it strength and conditioning wise, or did they just understand it when it came to being bigger and stronger at the point of attack? That's where Nebraska needs to jump, right? Is at the point of the point of attack, and they're trying to get better at it.
Right. And they pick, you know, what happens is the young guys see the older guys and they pick up on it right away. You know, and so it's kind of a situation there where, you know, it's built in as time goes on. You know, you had, of course, Boyd's group of, and we had exceptional guys that were assistant weight coaches, and they primarily were the guys that really ran the show, and, you know, with Boyd's direction. But so the agility part, comes in, the weight part comes in, you know, as part of the whole thing. And they have schedules as to what day might be this and what day might be, you know, agility and other things. So I don't know how that works now, how they do that. But, you know, everybody's has their kind of their own philosophy of it. My only philosophy in weight training was that defensive linemen, and in particular guys that were really down, did a lot of dumbbell work in different ranges of motion, because they're, where an offensive lineman is doing more of the bench press motion. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're pass blocking and run blocking. Defensive lineman has to do other things. He has to throw with one arm and, you know, reach underneath with one arm. And
do we lose him?
Type drills you can do to improve, you know, your strength in different directions.
Coach, you still there?
Yeah.
Okay, we had you cut out for a second. We're good now. But you had guys work on different parts of the motion, because those are the moves and the movements they were going to need to invoke on the line of scrimmage.
Well, let's just put two dumbbells in your hand and hang them down and take the right dumbbell and put it over on the left shoulder, and you know, and stuff, and then vice versa, and some of that kind of stuff, some alternate inclines and maybe alternate. There's a lot of different you can do. I mean, there's monumental ones and that you can add to it. Now, those things, I know with our guys, if they didn't do enough of them in the weight room, they would do them on their own.
Gotcha.
I mean, in other words, with the program. You know, because you can still work that in, and do a lot of them actually in the summertime, you know, to get that part. And sometimes, you know, it works on your flexibility as to, you know, the old flies where you're used to laying on your back and you take the two dumbbells and put them together over your chest. Well, we took the weights off the ground.
Oh, wow.
And that yeah. And you can see, if you don't develop those kind of muscles, you can reach for a tackle and you don't have any strength past the, you know, just the normal shoulder line, and it could dislocate your shoulder pretty quick if you don't. You know, that way you have a little more strength in that area and flexibility with strength. Yeah, just, you know, there's a lot of little niches in some of that stuff. But I learned a lot of it, you know, when I was hanging around with the late coach out at the Denver Broncos. He was a physiologist, actually, but he was also a defensive line coach and weight coach at the same time.
Man,
Stan Jones was his name. He's passed on. He was an all-pro defensive lineman for the Bears, but then went on to be a coach. And he's very, very into the, you know, physiology of exercise and things like that. So he was pretty rounded. So he was the one that really kind of put me on the dumbbell track. But a lot of times they don't do that with the whole team because it doesn't fit with the whole team, you know. And so they kind of went more the offensive lineman direction. And then again, one of the things that there's been different groups. I remember I had a coach, a kid named Mike Webster, and Mike traveled around, very strong guy. And he would say, for example, the one thing about football is you have certain weight training for football positions. For example, if you're going to do a squat, okay, that's for strength. If you're going to do a front squat where the weight is in front of you, that's more like football because the guy's in front of you, and you develop a whole new, you know, can of worms there. Whereas the same thing, if you're a bench press guy, where you really are, if you're in the power position with your butt down, head up, and you're making contact, you're in what we call the incline position. If you put them in that manner, just take your hand and turn it over. We put it in the incline, turn it over, and you're doing an incline press. So, you know, there's a lot of crazy things in weight training that they do, and I think the biggest thing that goes with it is footwork.
Footwork's so important, speed and agility, great, and you have the ability to get stronger and focus in on those specific body parts, and that's so good. Coach, we'll let you keep on moseying down the road. Be safe, stay healthy, and we'll be sure to run you down next week. Maybe we'll have a coach to talk about on the defensive line.
I'll tell you what, next week is Monday the 24th, is that the day?
I think 25th.
I may have, okay. Oh, Sunday I'm speaking to all the Nebraska people out here, so right after I do my little trick at the hospital, so I ought to be in good shape.
Well, we're thinking about you. You know that.
Okay.
Take care,
well,
Coach.
Hang in there. I will.
Oh, good.
Okay.
That's
what
we like.
Thanks for having me.
See
okay.
You. Bye.
Bye-bye.
There he is. Coach is just indestructible. He's the best. But that's pretty unique. I mean, to hear strength and conditioning, what they got after, why they got after it, and liked hearing the zone blitz stuff. That was really cool. We'll have to talk to Steve Warren someday soon about just how many picks he had. How about Madonna Therapy Plus? Getting trained for a marathon? Are you trying to run off some of those pounds? Well, Therapy Plus with Madonna, 3 locations in Lincoln, 1 in West Omaha. The Runwell program designed to keep runners healthy, perform their best, get to the root of the problems with analysis, video, and comprehensive running form evaluation. Log on today with Madonna, therapyplusmadonna.org.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, it's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Let's talk some basketball. In our Hoops Insider, man, Jacob Padilla at Jacob Padilla _ where you can find him on Twitter, HailVarsity.com and magazine. Jacob, it was one mother of a snowstorm Saturday. I was listening to part of the game coming back from Junior's basketball tournament and caught the second half at a local watering hole. And that was some tough offense to watch, man. How'd you get through it?
Yeah, I'm just glad that I was given the go-ahead to stay at home in Omaha and watch on TV. Derek Peterson had my back covering the game in the arena, so I don't have to worry about the snow. But, yeah, that was not great offense, to put it mildly. But, and again, I guess it there is a certain level of I guess it was really impressive to win a game when you shoot 32.8% from the field. So there's a lot about your defense, and I guess a little bit about the team you're playing against as well. But Nebraska took care of business. They did what they needed to do to get out of there with a win, and now they're looking to make it three straight tomorrow.
Yeah, you just needed to have something good happen. Nebraska able to put back-to-back wins together and maybe put a little push together. We'll get into projecting here these final five. And, you know, Penn State's really a wild card, but Nebraska 59-50. Northwestern at one point just they were always kind of hanging around, right? I mean, and they did so because Nebraska's offense had a tough stretch. I think 21 to 25 shots were missed between the end of the first half and into the second half. But you know what? Let's spend some time on Isaiah Roby and really what he was able to do. There were some spurts from him. Overall, what just an insane stat line. He was great around the rim protecting. He had some key makes from distance. He was 19 and 16 and of course had a couple of assists. How many turnovers did he end up with?
Just two.
Okay, so his turnover numbers were down and I think zero fouls. What I loved about what Roby was able to do, and Northwestern had no answer, is Roby was playing the 3-4 and the 5 spots, just kind of rotating around, was very versatile. And moving forward, I think that's good. Can Roby have a game where he's not tentative? And do you think when it comes to his hesitancy to take that shot once he catches it, you know, the pump fake and then the drive, and then there could be a turnover, there could be a missed shot. Rarely does he finish cleanly, though, after the shot fake. Is he wanting the big splash dunk as to the shot fake, or is it just more of a habit he's got to break here on offense where he's being hesitant, so much so that he got called out at halftime and he adjusted appropriately?
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, first you look at what he did. Like, if he was able to finish a couple more of those bunnies, we're talking about a monster game. Mm-hmm. As it was, he was 19 points on 19 field goal attempts and 3 of 8 from three, which is career high for attempts. And so that was a great sign to see. But two of those were kind of late clock desperation shots where he didn't really have much of a choice. So
didn't have to think, you know, just shoot.
Yeah. But you take out those two misses, he's 3 of 6 on good looks from three. And the first one he hit was off the dribble. So that's good to see, that part of the game and the fact that he did make the adjustment, but not that I can ever hope to put myself in Isaiah Roby's shoes, but I have the tendency to do the pump fake and try to attack a closeout when the closeout isn't necessarily there. You kind of think that, oh, he's going to come out to me. You kind of underestimate how much space you have. And I think he's just more comfortable trying to attack than he is with that perimeter shot. It hasn't gone in quite as much as you would think just based on the way it looks. He's got really good form, good release and everything. It just doesn't always go where he wants it to. But building that confidence in that shot is key because it will open up the rest of his game. If he's taken that shot, then teams will have to close out to him. And then he will be able to get by him, get those dunks, get the layups, make plays for others. And that's what he really wants to do. So it was good to see in that second half that Miles kind of got through to him, told him, hey, you've got to take this shot no matter what. And hopefully they can keep that going forward because I definitely think it's going to open up other things for him and Nebraska as a whole.
What'd you see from Palmer? What'd you see from Glenn Watson Jr.? They were kind of back to the combined 7-29 fiasco offensively. It's not that they're not playing hard or trying, but there's a lot of quick jump shots. There's a lot of contested jump shots. And you saw Nebraska just a game ago kind of invoke the dribble drive, right? The weave to get downhill. That was a priority. That was an emphasis. And it worked. And both guys shot high percentages. Nebraska didn't go back to that. Is that because of what Northwestern had with Pardee and company in the paint? Or, you know what, was just part of the game plan to see what you have that's open or just let the offensive flow kind of come to you? Because, again, man, Nebraska took a lot of shots that made their offense really hard to watch.
Yeah, there were stretches of that game where they were moving the ball well. I mean, heck, Palmer ended up with six assists and just one turnover. And early on, they were sharing it. Guys were getting some good looks, but they kind of some of the looks didn't fall, and they kind of fell into the trap of forcing some stuff up again. And Palmer, at this point, I just don't know what it is. He ends up just getting caught in between on these tough shots. He's rarely getting all the way to the rim, and he isn't making those shots at the same rate as he used to. I mean, you take out the – he went 0 for 6 from 3, just couldn't buy one, and he had a lot of pretty good looks from 3 within those 6 attempts and couldn't hit them. But he's still 3 of 11 on two-pointers. So it wasn't like he – it was all the jumpers. It's being able to get to the rim and finish too. And Watson, just some of the shots didn't fall. He had a huge one late, kind of a step-back three out of a pick-and-roll when Benson didn't step to him. So that was a huge play by him. But, yeah, we're just seeing guys not – I don't know what it is, but, I mean, it, just go back to that the scouting report on Palmer and what to do against him, and he hasn't been able to beat that at this point consistently.
Jacob Padilla is with us, HailVarsity.com and magazine at Jacob Padilla _, where you follow him on Twitter talking Nebraska basketball. So Nebraska gets the win. They feel pretty good. There's two in a row right there. And Penn State looms here. Jacob, what are some thoughts? What are some keys here? What'd you glean from Coach Miles a little bit earlier today on this road trip to Happy Valley?
Yeah, they were talking up Penn State's talent level, obviously. I mean, they're way down in the Big Ten standings. They've really struggled this year. But they've got some talented players, although some of those guys aren't playing as well as I think Penn State would have hoped this year. And heck, Mike Watkins, their stud center from last year, he's had a just nightmare season. And he's come off the bench the last two games and was basically a non-factor. Heck, he fouled out in 12 minutes without even attempting a shot, I believe, against Penn State, or against Purdue. So you take that piece out of there, and Penn State just doesn't have enough firepower, I don't think, in general, to win these games, although they're kind of making – they've made themselves competitive against some good teams. They beat Michigan. I'm still not quite – even looking at the box score, I'm still not quite sure how that happened. they lost at Purdue, but didn't get dominated in that one necessarily. So they're competitive. They're scrappy. You look back at the first game, and that was actually the last game that Nebraska has gotten to 70 points. They've been below 70 every game since then, and even that game was a 70-64 win. So that was kind of the start of Nebraska's offensive struggles. Coming off that game at Iowa where they scored 84 points. And so that it's going to be tough, I think, sledding for Palmer again, going against Josh Reeves, who's one of the best perimeter defenders in the Big Ten. And I think he kind of helped Palmer in check last game. So you're going to need some team offense in this one, but rebounding is going to be the key. They gave up 21 offensive rebounds, I believe it was, the last time against Penn State. And Nebraska was still able to hold on to win. But you give up 21 rebounds at Penn State, it's going to be tough to come out with that victory. So they're going to have to control the glass much better than they did. And I think having Tanner Borchardt in the lineup with Roby at the four will certainly help that. That definitely upgrades your rebounding from where you had Roby at the five and Isaac Copeland at the four. So we'll see how that changes the game. I know Lamar Stevens is their best player. He's not particularly efficient, but he's a talented scoring kind of combo forward. And when Roby switched onto him down the stretch, he was kind of giving Copeland some problems in the second half. And Roby switched onto him and basically shut him down. So I think that's the matchup that I'm going to be watching most intently is how can Roby stay out of foul trouble and can he keep Stevens in check? Because if Stevens isn't scoring, I don't think Penn State can muster up enough offense.
Jacob, how where's the door at right now? Is it shut? Is it wide open? Is it cracked with Nebraska in the NCAA tournament? You got to win tomorrow night, but you have so many opportunity even to go 2-2, or dare I say 1-3 these last four, excluding Penn State. Where do you look at Nebraska right now on the bubble?
I mean, yeah, it's never truly closed down. Obviously, you always got the conference tournament you can win. And with the opportunities on Nebraska struggle, basically every game left is a Q1 win. Mm-hmm. So if they can find some way to put together wins, they're definitely still in it. But the question is, how realistic is that? Can you see them beating Purdue, beating Michigan State, beating Iowa? That's kind of tough to see right now, even scraping. I mean, you look at these last two wins, Minnesota and Northwestern, they're not particularly good teams, and Nebraska just barely scraped by at home. And now you got coming up, three of these five are on the road. So right where Nebraska is right now, I think they're going to have a tough time squeezing through that door, but there's at least a crack there. And if they can kind of improve themselves and continue to get better, I suppose the opportunity is still out there. It's just not very realistic.
No, there's still some hope, and we'll see what they get from Roby and Palmer and Watson and company in Happy Valley. About 15 seconds here. How do you think the committee looks at Illinois and Penn State? They're both under 500. They both have knocked off some giants when it comes to the depth of the league.
Yeah, I think in general, it's kind of speaks to the talent of the Big Ten and the depth and the talent of the teams at the bottom. But I think they're still going to be considered bad losses. Like overall, their resumes just aren't very good. Their records aren't very good. So it doesn't really matter that much when you get down and start looking at things. The talent is going to matter a lot more than the record is going to matter a lot more than the personnel on those teams. So those are games that you just don't want those as losses on your resume.
Jacob, thanks for the time today.
Yep, thanks for having me.
Chime in 402-466-ESPN or email the show, chris@halevarsity.com.
Just try me.
Back to Hale Varsity Radio.
One and down a Monday, Hale Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, 80s action star Colton Stone, and big thanks to Charlie McBride and Jacob Padilla right there. Good story by Derek Peterson when it comes to what you need to be a college football playoff contender. So Bama's been there. Clemson's been there. Ohio State and Oregon and Florida State and Auburn, they've been there. But what type of recruiting class do you need to be a college football contender? Be a playoff participant? And the question is asked in reference to the 2019 S&P projections coming out Monday. They have Nebraska ranked 45th. That is pretty extraordinary, considering they're the only team in the top 50 that were below 500. And Nebraska was 4-8, not 5-7. So, what do you believe as a Nebraska football fan here when it comes to recruiting rankings? So, many of you will be like, well, stars are overrated. And some of you are like, no, stars are freaking important. There's an example for each. Right, Jared Tomich wasn't a high-profile guy. Jared Tomich was an All-American. Jared Tomich is one of the best pass rushers and run stoppers Nebraska's had. And Ndamukong Suh, big-time star. Right, 4-star, should have been 5-star. If he didn't live in Portland, would have been a 5-star. Guy was incredible. Game-changing. Now, he didn't become Suh till his junior year. But case in point, Prince Amukamara, 3-star. Searles, 3-star. Amir, 3-star. Rex, 4-star. I mean, there's evidence. Quincy Enunwa, under the radar dude. Kenny Bell, pretty highly thought of, but came from a wing tee offense in Boulder. Right? So there's examples that go both ways. You need stars, you don't need stars. And this is the truth of it. You need 5-star, 5-year. You need a program that develops talent into maximum ability. And it's a 5-year process. Mm-hmm. Or you need to get guys in here that are Adrian Martinez, their freshman year, or Tommy Frazier, their freshman year, and be insanely awesome by the time they're a senior. Mm-hmm. That's how you go about it. 5 year, five star. Okay. And if you get both, like Alabama, if for some reason that the five star isn't producing, and lo and behold, Bama takes someone as lowly as a three star, they'll get him maximized to be a really great football player. So the recruiting rankings in a 4 year window here, the 4 year average for Alabama was one. Their highest ranking was one. Their lowest ranking was one. Oregon's average, okay, Oregon the last few years, if you go back to the Mariota era, their average ranking was 16.5. The lowest ranking they had was, what I mean by low is their best number was 12th. Mm-hmm. Their worst was 21st. Florida State averaged 5 in the recruiting rankings. Second was the best they did. 11th was the worst. And then there's Ohio State. The average was 4. Best they did was 2. Worst they did was 6. And this is a really good story, HailVarsity.com. The way you go about it, your blueprint doesn't have to be Oregon. But Oregon did it like Nebraska did it, where they'll go get kids that fit their system and coach them up and make them good. Mm-hmm. Don't act like it's void of talent, because Oregon went hard into Texas and into California and into Hawaii and built up some squads. Mm-hmm. They got Haloti Ngata from the Utah region. Okay, they got Buckner, the defensive end, in that 3-4 that's playing for San Francisco. Okay, so they have picked their spots to get some really high-profile guys that ended up being drafted high. But for the most part, it's going to be a system where you get guys and you sprinkle around. That's what Oregon did. Clemson here is kind of what you need to model. And Clemson's different because for decades, Clemson was 7-5, and they'd have players, and they'd pull a Clemsoning, right? They'd underachieve, and now they've hit all-time highs because they've had some game-changing quarterbacks. Trevor Lawrence has got a national championship as a freshman. Deshaun Watson was phenomenal. Deshaun Watson was an under-the-radar three-star quarterback. They have loaded up with skill talent, but where Clemson has made their money and been better than you in the ACC and been better than Florida State, they've been better than Louisville, they've been better than Ohio State, is on the lines of scrimmage. And the region of the country they're in South Carolina, they are a skip and a jump from Georgia. Mm-hmm. They're a skip and a jump from Bama. They're not far from North Carolina. I mean, they're in the area where they can just go load up on defensive line talent. They've been good with their offensive line, too. And they've been a pretty balanced attack last year, winning the title with a run game and a freshman quarterback and some just hellacious skill receiver, big body wideouts. But Clemson is a model that can be replicated. And if you look at Nebraska, I think when Nebraska was in their golden era, did so. There weren't rating systems out, but you had blue chip, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you had a rating system, and Nebraska would go get blue chip talent around the region, around the country. But Clemson, I mean, they I think were ranked 36th or 37th. In year one of Dabo, okay, his first full year. After the interim year, Dabo takes over. Clemson finishes 36th in the recruiting rankings, and they finish his first full year, I think, like right at 9 wins, okay? Then they dip down to about 7 wins in 2010. Their recruiting class a little bit better in they're on 27th or so. But what starts to happen with Clemson is coordinators are there, talent is retained, and Clemson starts winning. I mean, they just start reeling off 10-win seasons, and then they just build. They go from 10 wins to an 11-win season. Oh, wow, best year ever at Clemson. They're 11-2. And then they just keep rolling. They stack talent, but they have developed talent. They get guys ready. And you can go get a recruiting class that Clemson's best recruiting class was, I think, their 6th this year in 2018. For the most part, their probably, the way this graph reads, they're between 10 and 20. So let's call them 15. Let's say Clemson brings in the 13th best class in the region. And that's enough, because if you maximize that, you develop talent, you got a mid-teens recruiting class, you can coach those dudes up. And that top 15 recruiting class turns into a top 5 school. That's how Osborne did it. That's how Nebraska did it, through development and talent and then the depth. And Clemson's had time to grow and get better. And they've won a lot of big games. They just find ways to do it. They recruit well, but they recruit well to their system.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
One final time on your Monday. Rick Pizzo, Mitch Sherman tomorrow. Excited about that. Wisconsin, Illinois, the Badgers favored by 10. Does Illinois turn back to normal tonight? They have been on a freaking roll. I can't in good conscience pick Wisconsin to cover tonight. Illinois is too explosive, too athletic. Maybe they'll play like crap and get drilled by 30, Illinois. But between Illinois is like the most toxic, dangerous team there is, that's 5 games under 500. All I've done is talk about Illinois basketball and how good they are.
And in reality,
and they are,
but they aren't at the same time. Like, record-wise, they aren't. But, like, it's the Big Ten. Anyone can be good at it any night.
And Illinois has been good, like, a lot recently.
Yeah.
I mean, they beat Ohio State on the road, right? They won in overtime against Rutgers. They rocked Michigan State. They beat Nebraska. That's just, like, through February. I mean, they have not lost in February. All right. In January, okay, they lost at Indiana when Indiana gave a damn. They've lost to Northwestern. They lost at home to Michigan. Yeah, beat at Iowa. But you know what really kind of kick-started them? But see, then they lost to Minnesota on the road, which is kind of weird. But they went and just tore apart Maryland in Madison Square Garden.
Yeah,
am I just drunk here that I think Illinois is going to put a run together in Chicago and just start, like, slaying people?
I feel like if you're not a team, or maybe if you are a team that plays on that first day, it helps. But if you're a team that plays that second day, I think you're setting yourself
up for
failure. Mm-hmm. Basically, you either want to you want to play the first day to catch momentum, or you want to play the last day to know who your opponents are, because you've had 2 days to watch them. Mm-hmm. But if you're that middle group, it gets kind of dicey. So I'm not going to say that Illinois or Penn State or anyone's going to just make a tear, but it's not unlikely. Rutgers won 2 games last year in the Big Ten tournament. It looked like they were going to dethrone somebody.
This just in, that UNLV is in discussion with Rick Pitino.
That's the place to do it.
Does he not scream Vegas with his white Brioni suit? I mean,
better let Danny know.
UNLV, well, UNLV's like, screw it. We've had the talk. We had the running Rebs. That's the perfect fit, right? That is the perfect fit. Buffets and prostitutes. Rampant. And
it's legal depending on where you are in Nevada.
Depending on where you are in Nevada. I mean, is that the pitch? Hookers and beer? Some biscuits and gravy? Huh?
Probably.
And chef will cook special for you? Dancers will kick the tongue out of your mouth? All right, we're back tomorrow at 4. Thanks for your time. Hail Varsity continues. Back at you at 4 tomorrow. Be good.